10, 15.
Back upfield to the 35, to the 40, 45, 50.
Pass the 50.
35, 40.
Pass the 30.
To the 20.
Inside the 20.
You got to be kidding me.
To the 10.
Whoa! He scores!
He's all the way home.
The no flags!
Oh, my God. Holy moly.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
One of the greatest upsets in sports history.
Hello again, everyone. This is the Old College Try. This is your host, Tim Hyland. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mike Unger. Mike, we were just chatting. It is Monday around 5 o'clock. We just left a remarkable, one-of-a-kind weekend, which I'll explain in a second. And re-entry into reality was tough today, Mike.
Oh, I'm going through it as we speak. Throw a little cold that I'm fighting off on top of those things. Now, you know, going in, this is one of your darker Mondays on the calendar, you know, just because, well, dark, literally one of your darkest Mondays, of course. But also the week before is so glorious. The week we just ended and it lived up to every expectation that we had. Almost by definition, the Monday after is going to be brutal. And this one is living up to it.
So as listeners know, we've talked ad nauseum about this. I mean, clearly we love college football. Otherwise, we wouldn't waste our time doing this podcast.
waste our time.
We love Thanksgiving, right? And then I don't know why, Mike, I had this dumb realization on Saturday when I had glorious college football. I was still like basking in the glory of Thanksgiving, just writ large. And I have the World Cup on top of it. And I'm like, this will never happen again in my lifetime.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. All those people who died in Qatar making those stadiums, it wasn't in vain.
No. That's a terrible thing to say, Mike.
I know. It was sarcastic.
But anyway, I was like, I tried very hard to like savor every moment, because that combination is never going to happen again. A long way of saying I had a glorious, glorious, glorious weekend. Our Thanksgiving dinner was really good. Our turkey was great. There was so much awesome football, Mike. You were texting me. I must admit, I didn't make it to the late games on Saturday night, but you certainly did. And you were like, I think your last text was, this has been a glorious day of college football.
I thought you wanted it noted that you were staying up for the Apple Cup.
I tried.
Yeah. The Apple Cup was wildly, wildly entertaining, like all the games before it. It was a weekend that met our expectations as college football fans.
Absolutely. So there's, I will say this as a disclaimer up front. There was so much football this weekend, so much, and so many compelling games. And of course, you know, it's now Monday and it's like, you think back like, oh, what happened in that Ole Miss game that was so wildly entertaining? It's hard to remember it all, right? So
it is. Thursday seems like a lifetime ago, but the Egg Bowl was spectacular as always. The Egg Bowl always delivers.
So my disclaimer is this. There was too many amazing games this weekend to document here. I will do my best. We'll do our best to hit the highlights, Mike. And at the end, if there's a game you wanted to talk about and I didn't talk about, please chime in.
Agreed? Okay. Yes. Agreed.
All right. We'll start. We'll do this in chronological order. We have to start on Thanksgiving evening. Again, what a great way to end a great day. Rather than the Egg Bowl, what just a wonderful game overall. And this was a great addition of the Egg Bowl. It's a whole lot happening in Mississippi college football right now. But just talking about this game, I'm not shocked by the result. Are you, Mike?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I took Mississippi State and the points, but what an interesting game, how it unfolded. I mean, you think Mississippi State has scored a touchdown to go up basically 14, make it 15. They review it. They put the ball back at the one. Then Mississippi State fumbles. Ole Miss gets the ball at the one, drives 99 yards for a touchdown, and then fails on the 2-point conversion. It was pretty special. And you had the backdrop of is Lane Kiffin leaving the next day to go to Auburn.
And we'll get there later. That whole thing is so bizarre. I mean, oh God. But yeah, outstanding game. Congrats to Mississippi State. We have not been to this game. It's certainly one I'd love to see. Everything I've read about it and heard about it, just based on like the dynamics in state there, you know this must be the greatest day in the world for Mississippi State fans beating that Ole Miss team, right? I mean,
oh yeah,
Oh, there, it's a clear, it's like maybe the most blatant big brother, little brother thing in the country, I think.
There are a lot of them, but this one is definitely has to be top five in terms of that lack of respect from one school to another.
Even down to like the town and the tailgating scene, everything.
Yeah.
Like no one speaks wistfully of going to Mississippi State games, right?
No. I heard somebody on the radio leading up to this game attempt to contrast like the typical fan of Ole Miss and Mississippi State. And they said Starkville is more of a rural location, which is saying something in Mississippi. It said a lot of the Mississippi State fans really like to hunt and fish.
That makes sense. This one to me.
And bang a cowbell.
It's here for just for giggles. Nebraska 24, Iowa 17. I mean this most sincerely. Mickey Joseph's the coach, right? He was the coach in Nebraska.
Was till yesterday.
Thank you, Mickey Joseph, for sparing us the spectacle of Iowa having to play in the Big Ten title game. I mean, Purdue's no great shakes, but like, as Iowa's been so awful all year, I couldn't have stomached them being in the Big Ten championship game. This one did surprise me. Nebraska's been mostly awful the entire year. Iowa giving up 24 points to Nebraska is like, what? So anyway, this one was the Legends game, and did not expect this result, Mike.
Well, yeah, especially because Nebraska got out to a huge, huge lead.
Yeah.
Which was a great kind of statement and sentiment to what they thought of their coach, those kids playing that hard.
Yep.
On the last game of the season, the day after Thanksgiving. So tip of the cap to Mickey Joseph. And you're right. Thank God that we're not seeing a rematch of last year's Big Ten title game in which Michigan completely annihilated the Iowa Hawkeyes. And Purdue, we'll get to that game later. But Purdue, I think, will give Michigan a much, much, much better game than a lot of people think.
Will they give a better game than Ohio State did, Mike?
Quite possibly. Definitely in the second half.
We'll get there in a second. Number 19, Tulane 27, number 24, Cincinnati 24. Again, more news coming out of Cincinnati related to later, but Tulane is going to end up being what? They're going to be the top ranked power or group of five team, right?
Well, they have to win the AAC title game on Saturday to ensure that's the case. But interesting, Cincinnati had the nation's second longest home winning streak snapped in this game. And we'll get to the team that had the longest home winning streak snap. So it was that kind of weekend.
This game started interesting and then became uninteresting. Number one, Georgia 37, Georgia Tech 14. Look, Tech came to play. They had an early lead. I sensed some nervousness from our friend, listener Brian Schleter. But in the end, Georgia was Georgia.
Yeah, I was at the Georgia bar watching with noted listener Brian Schleter and our other friend Lewis, who is an alum as well. And yes, Georgia Tech scored right off the bat to make it 7-0. But slowly but surely, Georgia just exerted their will. And look, this is kind of how Georgia's played all year, right? They kind of play down to their opponents.
Yeah.
But in the end, there was really no doubt to this game. And I think you'll have a very focused Georgia team next week against LSU because we forget they didn't win the SEC last year. So I think that's a goal that they still have.
A SEC title game, by the way, that, well, no, it's not true. I will stop that statement. Anyway, number three, Michigan 45, number two, Ohio State 23. I texted my dad about 10 minutes before this game started. And I was like, this is a fascinating Ohio State Michigan. I had no idea what direction it was going to go. It could have gone any direction in my mind. I didn't think it would be this. And I think this is one of the most significant results in college football in a long, long time. Jim Harbaugh took a lot of heat for a lot of years for failing at Michigan based on the expectations that was placed on him when he was hired, right?
Yeah.
I think people who don't live in or aren't understanding of Big Ten country and how lopsided this rivalry was for so long in Ohio State's favor, the seismic effect of Michigan, not just beating them twice in a row, but blowing them out twice in a row and kind of embarrassing them in the way they beat them.
Oh, definitely.
This is a game-changing result. And I say this with even as I understand in my mind, I think Ohio State still at this point has the more talented roster. I think Michigan has officially like they are now the Ohio State of the Big Ten. They are a program to chase based on so many factors. And Ryan Day, 45 and 5 in Ohio State, but two of those losses to Michigan, and this is silly and stupid. There are people in Ohio who think he should be fired.
Yeah, I saw that. I've seen some stuff here. Lot to unwrap with this game. First of all, I think you're totally right. The Michigan is the new alpha dog in the Big Ten. Everybody is chasing them, including Ohio State. But if you would have told me Blake Corum basically didn't play, I think he had 2 carries for 5 yards.
Yep.
And that the way Michigan was going to win was by J.J. McCarthy throwing bomb after bomb after bomb. I think he had 3 touchdown passes of more than 40 yards, which is the first time Michigan has done that in 15 years. This was the biggest lopsided win for Michigan since 1993 in the series. And every time you looked up and then throw in the 2 super long runs by Edwards, both of those were, I think, over 75 yards. Every time you looked up, Michigan was scoring an explosive play. And what was the narrative all season after Michigan embarrassed Ohio State's defense last year? It was that we're bringing in Jim Knowles. We're going to change things. Everything is going to change. And basically, when push came to shove, Michigan just dominated Ohio State's defense just in a different way.
And look, the big runs at the end were notable. The story of the game, to your point, was, look, Ohio State's been big on this zero coverage thing, right? And they put a lot of trust in their corners. Their corners got embarrassed.
Yes, and their safeties, too. Their entire secondary.
Totally exposed. And the fact that they didn't adjust at some point, like, I mean, it's a coaching failure. It is. Your guys were not up to
the task. And a credit to Michigan's coaches. What a game plan they came up with. And then you throw in things like the jump pass. Like, they were just the more – it was an out-playing and an out-coaching, I think.
And to do it in Columbus, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Can you imagine the grumpiness factor of those fans leaving the shoe?
Again, I respect Ohio State in many ways.
It makes you giggle, doesn't it, Tim, as a former Ohioan?
It does. I know those people, Mike. I was one of them one time. Right. Like, anyway,
now I don't know if you want to get into this now or we can get into it later, but Ohio State's playoff hopes are not done.
They are not done. No, we'll get into that later.
Okay.
This one, Saturday night, walked across the street to my neighbor's house. We were all sitting outside around a fire watching this game. How about A&M 38, number 5, LSU 23, Mike? How about that one?
For some reason, I could see this coming. I'm not sure why, but I could kind of see it coming. Now, did I think it would be that, you know, big of an outright win by A&M? No. But this Texas A&M, this was it. Obviously, this is their last game of the season, and they had everything. And LSU had everything to lose, and they're not used to being in a position like that, at least with this current roster. I mean, they were in 19, but what an egg. They laid such an egg LSU in this game because their playoff hopes are gone now, 100% gone. And if they had just gotten by A&M, they would have had a chance to win in Atlanta and go. So it's a hard year to – what do you assess about Brian Kelly's first year? Certainly they made some steps forward, but they got smoked by Tennessee. They lose convincingly to Texas A&M. They struggled in some other games. So it's interesting. A couple teams here have had some results at the end of the season that really impact how you look on their entire body of work. And I think LSU, this is one of those.
LSU to me is the most confounding team in the country this year.
Yeah.
The results just don't add up the way they played out. It doesn't really make any sense. Right.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So we'll see. Brian Kelly year 2 will be very, very interesting. Number 6, USC 38, number 15, Notre Dame 27. Another great game. Right, Mike? USC is sitting pretty right now.
Oh, so I watched all this game, and USC was very, very impressive. Caleb Williams in particular. I mean, I think that was a Heisman-clinching performance that we saw. The whole country was watching. That was the main primetime game they were playing Notre Dame. He's got such shiftiness and elusiveness. It's incredible. He can evade the pass rush and run it, or he can evade the pass rush and then throw it. And not a lot of guys can do both of those things. And it was a grade A uniform matchup. USC just really flexed their muscle. And I think it's quite clear that if they beat Utah, which is no foregone conclusion,
no,
then they'll be going to the playoff. But we'll have more to say on that here in a bit.
This one. So I started my day. I think I had, I think my TV2 was Georgia Tech. And honestly, I was watching Ohio State, Michigan, number one, of course. And then when Georgia pulled away, I turned on, I think, Clemson, South Carolina.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, Clemson's dominating. I'm going to turn it off. And I was tuned out of this game until I got a text from my mom, of all people. Mike, because I didn't see what happened. What the hell happened here?
Clemson had three turnovers, and they were all untimely. And they all hurt. And DJ was, I think he completed 8 or 9 passes in the entire game for less than 100 yards. He was terrible. And Spencer Rattler played with his hair on fire, just like he did the week before. So when I said there are a couple teams whose late season results are changing the narrative of their entire season, South Carolina is one of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at the way that they blew out Tennessee, then they go into Death Valley and beat Clemson for the first time in 8 years. That's a program changing win. And for Clemson, they were clearly not a top tier team this year. They were a very good team, but they were not a playoff caliber team this year, and they need a quarterback. DJ just never developed and became the quarterback that everyone thought he was going to be. And so they'll have a new quarterback next year. And, but this one had to hurt if you're a Clemson fan.
All right, Mike. So of course I'm always reticent to upset any listener.
Yes, they're all treasured.
And we have, of course, a lot of Clemson listeners. And so sorry guys in advance, I'm just going to say this, you know, I have confidence that Ohio State will still be like really, really good every single year, almost no matter what, right? Clemson, let's face it, like they weren't Clemson that we know in the current era until Dabo, and right, things could go south for Clemson, and Clemson could return to being the Clemson we knew for the vast majority of our lives. You know what I'm saying here, Mike?
Yeah, it's a dangerous trend here with the last two seasons for Clemson. I mean, that being said, they're still 10-2. They have a chance to win the ACC. They're favored against a mediocre North Carolina team. So 11-2 with an ACC winning season, it just shows what expectations do for a program. But I think, to your point, next year will be a very, very key season for the Tigers.
Number 21, Oregon State, 38. Number 9, Oregon, 34. I was upset. This should not have been a 3:30 kick, Mike. Should not have been.
Yeah, you voiced your displeasure, and I completely agree with you. This is when we really wanted Pac-12 after dark.
And I will say this. I think we said last week, like we both agreed, like we saw Oregon State in person. They're a good team, right? Would not have been shocked at all if they beat Oregon, and they did. We are kind of like closet Beavers fans, right, Mike? So
closet to Beavers fans. I like that term.
Yes. But hey, Pac-10 has been so entertaining all year. So entertaining.
Yeah, it has been a great year for the Pac-12. And this was a wild game because Oregon had a huge lead. I believe it was 31-10. And Oregon State orchestrated their comeback by running the ball almost exclusively. They barely threw any passes in the second half, and Oregon just could not stop the Beavers' running attack. It was an interesting way to come back. And then, of course, there was a timely turnover and a late hold by the Beavers defense, but it was a super exciting game. I had a lot of people over watching college football. There were some raised eyebrows about the uniform matchup in this one. It almost seemed like Oregon State was trying to equal Oregon by wearing equally garish, bright orange pants and jerseys. But that being said, it was a great, great game, and congratulations to Oregon State.
Number 11, Penn State 35, Michigan State 16. Closer than the score suggests, it must be said. Michigan State, I have to give Mel Tucker credit and that team credit. They were down 7 guys who got, like, whatever, arrested or whatever, charged in the whole Michigan tunnel thing. And they could have, like, folded early. They did not fold. in the end, Penn State pulled it out. I think this is an important season for James Franklin after like two lackluster seasons, 10-2. And again, the chance for 11-2 is a good step forward for Penn State. I've been telling you, Mike, and you roll your eyes, the young core there is really something. They're going to be good next year, Mike. They're going to be very good.
No, that's good. They probably could be 10-2 again next year, which is very good season.
I think they will be, better next year.
They could be better and still be 10-2.
I think they're going to be, I think next year, I mean this most sincerely, because of what's happening in Ohio State in terms of who's leaving and who's stepping up here. I do think we beat Ohio State next year. I don't think we beat Michigan. That's where I'm at.
Interesting. And the Ohio State game is in Columbus next year.
Yep.
This game didn't even make it on one of my top four screens, but I will say that my brother-in-law and sister woke up on Saturday morning and surprised my nephews with tickets to this game, and they just got in the car and drove from suburban DC to Happy Valley and had a great time. They had good seats. They stayed to the bitter end and saw the Knits hold up the beloved Land Grant trophy. So it was a fun day in State College for the Clays.
They stayed over, right? They didn't drive
home. Stayed over. Yeah, they stayed over and then they came home.
Very nice.
On Sunday.
I will rely on here, Mike, because I did not see the game, unfortunately. Number 13, Washington 51, Wazoo 33. What happened here?
Awesome game. Very close through basically the first two and a half, three quarters, back and forth, wide open offensive game. And then Washington just pulled away. Michael Penix was spectacular, as he has been all season. I think he had 480 yards passing, and he caught a touchdown pass. He has just been otherworldly for his entire career. And if he could have stayed healthy somehow in those two seasons in Bloomington, you know, what could have been for the Hoosiers? But I'm happy for him to go to Seattle and have such success. And this was an interesting game because Washington, obviously it's a rivalry game, but Washington did not have a chance to make it to the title game. If they won, Utah would go. And if they lost, I think Oregon would have backed in. So there was a lot riding on it. It was a great game to watch, and congrats to Michael Penix and the Huskies.
So take the fact that we've been to Oregon and Oregon State out of the equation, okay? If you could see the Civil War or the Apple Cup, which one would you choose?
Ooh, I think it's hard to take out from the equation that we've been to both Oregon and Oregon State. I think I'd probably go Civil War. It seems like maybe a half notch above, although I would love to see the Apple Cup in either Pullman or Seattle. This one was in Pullman, but they're both great rivalries.
Viva Pac-12, right, Mike? Viva Pac-12. I just hope
it was a banner year for the Pac-12.
I just hope that the conference doesn't falter when USC and UCLA, like, you know, it's possible that it could fall off the map a little bit, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Some would say even probable.
Mike, any Maryland, Indiana updates for you?
Yes. Yes. The old Oak and Bucket game, of course, was a huge game because following Nebraska's win on Friday, we knew that it was win and go to the Big 12 or Big 10 title game for Purdue. So IU held it close as possible. There was a brutal non-contact injury. Our quarterback, Williams, planted, went down, and there was a very, very long delay, and he got carted off. It was very emotional. And Connor Bazelak came in, our backup, who was starter most of the year, and just we knew he was just not a good quarterback. And that was basically the end of it for IU. But, you know, Purdue is a solid team. They finished the year 8-4. They could have easily been 10-2. They were very close to beating Penn State to start the year. They should have beaten Syracuse on the road. And there'd be a little bit of a different narrative if they were 10-2 heading into this game. So I think I give them a chance to actually give Michigan a game. Maryland, by the way, 37-0 over Rutgers. Very weird season for the Terps. They finished 7-5, which is a successful year for Maryland. But they had a lot of big wins and a lot of very bad losses. So it'll be interesting to see where that program goes. IU, it's kind of back to the drawing board. They finished 4-8. They lost 7 of their last 8, and they need kind of a new philosophy starting at quarterback.
I do think it's so funny that the last game for Rutgers and the last game for Maryland is versus each other. It's like such a
It's an insult. It's a major insult to everyone involved.
It's the greatest not event of the year in Big Ten football is the Rutgers.
Yeah, exactly. I can't think of a worse rivalry. I mean, Illinois plays Northwestern. That's usually pretty bad, but at least there's some history there, right?
Illinois had Red Grange, right? I mean, come on.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did.
All right, Mike, the top 25. And so, of course, we're doing some Mondays, where this is not the college football playoff rankings. We're just going to use what do you think, Mike? How about we'll do the coaches today? The coaches?
We'll go out on the coaches poll.
By the way, like, who?
Why do they still do this?
Yeah, what's the purpose of it?
Yeah, I really don't know why they still go to the effort to do this. Maybe it's just specifically for us.
Others receiving votes. I do love, you know, I love this, Mike. Go on, I'll get there in a second. Wake Forest got one vote. James Madison, two votes. We got Fresno with two votes. Iowa still got six.
Iowa still got six votes.
Minnesota got seven. We got Illinois in there with like 10. South Alabama, 15. Nice. Air Force, 19. Purdue, 36. And of course, the top member of others receiving votes in the coaches poll, Ole Miss. Okay.
Oh, nice. Way to go, Ole Miss. And just one note about those others receiving votes. Minnesota had a very huge win over Wisconsin and took back the axe. And that's one of the best, most underrated scenes in college football is those players running around the field like madmen holding up that giant wooden axe.
It's a huge axe. It's scary.
It's ginormous. Yeah. And they really look like crazed lunatics when they're running around holding it up. It's not like holding a tiny little bucket or a bell or whatever the hell the Land Grant trophy is.
The Land Grant is a piece of furniture. That's what it is. One of
Kevin Warren should step in and he should just say, look, the Land Grant trophy now goes to the winner of Maryland and Rutgers. it seems like it's more apt for that rivalry.
One of the Penn reporters said, so one of our best players is a defensive tackle named PJ Mustafa. They've never seen a single player able to carry the trophy by himself. He was the first one.
It's that heavy, huh?
It's big. Anyway, so remind
it's us. Heavy with the weight of history.
The top team receiving votes and other receiving votes is Ole Miss with 83. Okay. This happens over and over and over again. Mike, who is number 25?
Texas.
Mississippi State, of course.
they win the Egg Bowl and they get their spot in the top 25. That is glorious.
24, Texas San Antonio. How about that, Mike? Wow. Number 23, UCF, 22, North Carolina, 21, Texas. Can't get rid of them.
I know, Texas hanging around.
20, South Carolina, 19, Notre Dame, 18, Tulane, 17, UCLA. Here we go again. It cracks me up every time. 16, Oregon State. Who's next, Mike?
15, Oregon?
Yes.
That is ridiculous.
14, Florida State, who had like an under the radar good year for them.
Yeah, right? Very good year for Florida State. They went 9-3. They beat LSU. They had they looked pretty good. I watched a tad bit of the game against Florida on Friday night, and it looked like a great kind of atmosphere was back at Doak Campbell.
12, Utah, 11, Clemson, 10, K State, who I think I said this before in the show. I don't think I've seen K State play the entire year, Mike.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of their game against TCU, but that's pretty much about it.
The next four teams to me, like, very interesting, and I think very much justified in their rankings, and also all the same team. 9 Washington, 8 Tennessee, 7 Penn State, 6 Bama.
I thought it was interesting how a lot of 6 Bama is kind of interesting. Is there a scenario where they sneak into the playoff? But, Tennessee, there was a lot of chatter about Vanderbilt perhaps covering or even winning. And I think that just angered Tennessee, like almost like awakening a sleeping bear. And with their backup quarterback, they put a 56-0 shellacking on the Commodores, kind of put him back into their place.
5 Ohio State, 4 USC, 3 TCU, 2 Michigan with 3 votes, and number 1 Georgia with 60 votes. Mike, again, the rankings come out tomorrow, the real rankings. I can't see it being any different in top 4 than being Georgia, Michigan, TCU, USC, and
no.
it has to be Ohio State at five, right?
Yeah, I think that's, those are going to be your rankings. And I think you're in a situation where Georgia is in with, even if they lose. Yep. I think Michigan is probably in, even if they lose.
Yep.
The interesting scenario would be if a TCU loses, do you go with Ohio State over TCU?
Yes, they will. They will absolutely boot TCU. No question.
I know. We've seen it before. And it's, as we've always said, these are human beings and this is a business and these are brands. And same thing with USC. I know of all those teams, I think USC, they lost already once to Utah, right? They lost by a point. Utah is a very, very good team. I could easily see them losing again. So if USC goes down, Ohio State and even Alabama are not out of it.
I you could be right, Mike. I just can't see a scenario that gets Bama in. I can't.
What if USC loses and TCU loses?
I think even if USC loses, I think based on the famous eye test, I think most voters would take USC, I think, right?
Over Bama, I'm not sure about that. I'm very much not sure about that.
So it's going to be a really interesting weekend to come.
Yep.
Mike, coaching news real quick. I think this is a home run hire. I think this is a guy who has had opportunities before him and declined them and was waiting for the right time and the right place. I think Luke Fickell to Wisconsin is huge. I think,
yeah.
First of all, I'm shocked by this because I thought the plan at Wisconsin was for Jim Leonard to be the coach. Like I totally thought that was,
they played very underwhelmingly for him though. I think the plan was to fire their coach early. So to give Leonard like an extended audition, and they were not very good under him either.
But Fickell, look, he's a Midwest guy. He played at Ohio State, was a very good player, by the way. He knows recruiting in that area, has done a phenomenal job at Cincinnati. I think in that Western division, I know it's going away eventually, whatever. I think he has a chance to like make, I think he will. Well, I can't say that. but I think it's a phenomenal hire for Wisconsin and a perfect fit in so many ways.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also like Matt Rule to Nebraska.
Next one, Matt Rule to Nebraska. To me, another home run hire. I don't give a shit that he didn't like succeed in the NFL. Who cares?
Totally irrelevant.
Right. It's a different thing entirely. He won at Temple. Mike, as you know, I'm a big fan of Temple. There's not a harder place.
I had a great stat. Matt Rule has a more recent top 10 win against a top 10 AP team than Nebraska does. And Matt Rule's came in 2017 when he coached Temple.
And
that is a staggering stat.
People don't understand. There is not a harder place to win in college football in America than Temple. Like, there's no history at all. They have to drive half an hour to their stadium. It's just the worst. They have no facilities. It's like the worst. And he won there, and then he won with Baylor. I think he's going to be Nebraska. I don't think will ever be what they were. I honestly can't see them ever elevating to like a top 10, top five team ever again. But he'll have them, I think, top 15, and which would be great, right?
Oh yeah, I think it's a great hire. And I heard him interviewed on game day on Saturday. What an impressive guy. Says all the right things. I think press conference today he said, it's going to take a lot of hard work. It might take a few years, but we're going to get it done. And I just like that sentiment. He's got an 8-year contract. And look at, you know, I wonder if ADs will now kind of look at Jim Harbaugh, because they wanted to run Harbaugh off and he had 5 years.
Right.
That's an eternity in this day and age for college football. All right. But look what's happened here in year 6 and 7 for Harbaugh. So interesting that Rule got an 8-year deal.
Auburn. Okay.
Oh my God.
First of all, we know this, like those kind of programs, like the fans have certain like expectations for who they're going to get. It's like, I also have great respect for Auburn and their history and whatever, But the reality is you are still the second best program in your own state. Okay. Two, you have a very notable record of treating coaches like garbage. You have super over-involved donors, right? Not every coach wants that, right?
Right.
So there was talk about Lane Kiffin, and I'm sure Lane just played it to get a little more money at Ole Miss. Okay. So I don't think Lane's happening. Then there was the Hugh Freeze thing, which is like so shameless and just like, oh, come on. Like, can you
Tim, as of 5:30 on Monday, when we're recording this, all the talk on Twitter is that Hugh Freeze is almost a done deal.
It's very embarrassing. Very embarrassing.
Well, he's beaten Alabama twice, and there's nothing more embarrassing than losing to Alabama if you're an Auburn coach or booster.
Ugh. What do you think, Mike? How do you feel about Hugh Freeze to Auburn?
I mean, I don't really care. B, I think he's a great coach. I mean, especially offensive. Everywhere he's been, he's had tremendous offenses. And if you're Auburn and you're going to live with hiring that kind of coach, you know, best of luck to you. I believe people should get second chances. I don't know what kind of person he is. I can't really make that judgment. But I think that they definitely looked at his experience in the SEC. They looked at the style of his offense, and they looked at the fact that when he was at Ole Miss, he beat Saban in Alabama twice. I think that was the biggest determining factor.
I think it's all they care about.
Yeah, pretty much.
Be honest. But if it is Hugh Freeze, I'll say this. Good luck, Hugh Freeze.
Yeah, you're going to have an extremely short leash.
One of the worst jobs in America. It's just one of the worst jobs in America. It is. It just is.
I don't know. It pays pretty well. And there's a good chance that you'll get fired early and get a monster buyout and not have to do anything for years.
All right. Games of the week, Mike. Are you ready?
I'm ready. We're down to our last week of football, Tim.
I'm already kind of depressed about that, too. But anyway, number 14, Utah versus number 6, USC, 8 p.m. Friday on Fox in Las Vegas, Mike. I don't love that necessarily.
No, and that favors USC, too, because that's a dome. It's a fast track. And with the way Caleb Williams, that offense is playing, that definitely favors USC. Trojans favored by 2.5.
Here's my only thought. My only thought, the line being only 2.5, like, I think is very telling, to be honest with you. Utah has been, over the years, battle-tested. Like, they're just consistently good, right?
Yep.
USC's been in the wilderness for a while now, and they are enjoying a new run of success here. And I just wonder if the players are going to be, like, super dialed. Like, are they going to take this one for granted, Mike? I can see – this is – I think – give me – by the way, before we get to, like, the locks of the week, give me Utah. Give me
Interesting.
Utah. Yeah.
You know, I see your line of thinking there, but I think Lincoln Riley is too good of a coach, and they know that there's kind of just like too much on the line for them. Not to mention that they've already lost to Utah, so they'll be out to avenge their only loss. So I definitely like USC here. And by the way, normally, Tim, we're Saturday people. We love Saturday college football and should be on Saturday. But I like the fact that we get a little bonus game here on Friday night.
I think it's a good move by the Pac-12 to get exposure, right? Why not?
Definitely.
Number 12, K-State versus number 4, TCU, noon Saturday, of course, in Arlington. I'll say again, I hate that I feel this way, but I've been to Jerry World. It's an amazing stadium.
I know. I find it funny that you say that, because it seems to go against all of your values and morals and what you believe in. I've never been there, of course, but my God, has there ever been a matchup of two purple teams like this? This place is going to be an eyesore for purple. TCU favored by only 2.5.
Is that correct?
K-State is playing. K-State is 9-3, and they're playing some really, really good football with Deuce Vaughn and their backup quarterback, Will Howard. And as we always hear too, it's hard to beat the same team twice, right? So TCU would have to do that to win the Big 12 and ensure their ticket to the Cup.
Mike, tell me if I'm being wrong here. Is number 5 LSU versus number one Georgia, 4 p.m. CBS in Atlanta, of course. Is this the least consequential SEC title game in our recent memory?
I would have to say, yes in recent memory. I mean, because you have Georgia, who even if they lose, they're going to the college football playoff. Then yeah. You have LSU, even if they win, they're not going. So that's right. A good observation. I can't remember one that's that has less on the line. Georgia 17.5-point favorites. That seems like a kind of a big number to me.
By the way, I said number five LSU. They're not number five, of course. They are number 13 in the coaches, number 11 in AP, and they'll be in the same area in the rankings. But it's like, yeah, it's like, okay, LSU's playing for what? Like an outside shot at near six, maybe, I guess.
No, I mean, if they win, they'll go to the Sugar Bowl for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and to say they won the SEC, they'll play hard. But yeah, the reality of it is there's not much is going to swing on them based on the result of that game.
Number 22 UCF at number 19 Tulane, 4 p.m. ABC. Essentially, I guess the game for the group of five.
Pretty much. I believe that whoever wins this one is going to probably the Cotton Bowl, possibly against your beloved Penn State Nittany Lions, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Tulane 10-2, UCF 9-3. Green Wave having a historic season. They are 3.5-point favorites. And you're right. So this one's on at 4 o'clock, head-to-head with the SEC. Tim, I'm saying it right now. This one might get top billing in my basement on the main screen, vanishing the SEC title game to TV, too.
Purdue, unranked Purdue at versus number 2 Michigan, 8 p.m. Fox, of course, in Indianapolis. I'm with you, Mike. I honestly think Purdue will give these guys a game. O'Connell can play. Michigan, yeah. They're riding high. They like that. Like, you can't tell me there will be a little bit of letdown, coming off that game in Columbus, right?
Exactly. Especially now they were in the same situation last year and they blew out Iowa, but Purdue is way better than Iowa. Purdue can possess the ball. You're right. They have a quarterback in O'Connell who's 10 times better than any quarterback Iowa's had in a decade. They have a receiver in this kid, Jones, I believe his name, who's been great all season. They've played, as we said, they've played a kind of a harder schedule. Their crossover game with Penn State. They played at Syracuse. That's a hard game. So they're battle tested. And I think Michigan might even be flying even more high this year because they went into Columbus and did it the way that they did. And honestly, I think even if they lose, Michigan will still go to the playoff. So I'm definitely taking Purdue plus the 16.5.
The only way Michigan doesn't make it in with a loss is they get blown out, which is not going to happen.
Right. And that's not going to happen. They're not going to get blown out.
By the way, do you think Michigan can win the title, Mike?
Good question. It's going to, you know, of course we saw Georgia, Michigan last year and they're different teams. True. But are they that different? You know, and Georgia just handled them so easily last year, but I think they have a better shot than they did last year. Cause they have a little more experience. They have a little more confidence. And so I'd say, yes, they have a chance, but I would not put them anywhere near the fit. Georgia to me is the overwhelming favorite.
Number 8 Clemson at number 8-17 North Carolina, 8 p.m. ABC in Charlotte. There's not going to be huge viewership numbers here for this game.
No, not in person or on TV. That's for sure. Clemson 7.5-point favorites against a Carolina team that's coming in off of losses to Georgia Tech and NC State. Clemson, of course, coming in off a loss to South Carolina. Weird ACC title game, but I guess an Orange Bowl berth is on the line. That's what you have to say about this one.
All right, Mike, our picks last week were what?
Tim, you manned up and you went with the Michigan Wolverines as an underdog. That was outstanding. I went with Washington, my beloved Washington Huskies. They won again. So we both got wins. We're both sitting there at 6 wins and 7 losses. So this is a very important week for us to try and get back to .500.
Bobby hit the bumper.
Place bets on college football.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir.
I'm shocked.
shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
The Mike Unger 50-50 possible lot, probable loser of the week.
Please hang up and try again.
Tim, for today's lock of the week, we are going to my beloved Indianapolis, Indiana, home of the Big Ten championship game. Normally, this would be sacrilege for me to pick Purdue in a game that they're playing in Indianapolis. But for some reason, I just really think that they're going to hold it close against Michigan. So I will take the Boilermakers plus 16.5 in the Big Ten title game.
I'm like, give me Utah, Mike.
Utes plus 2.5. So you think Utah is going to sweep USC. So we'll know that one by Friday. Good luck to you. It would be great if we could both get to 500. Maybe we'll do one more show next week and kind of wrap everything up, preview the college football playoff, talk a little Army Navy, pick one last game, and we'll see.
Mike, your plans this weekend are what?
No major plans this weekend, Tim. So I'll be watching tons and tons of college football. You have to drink it all in this weekend, right? Because this is our last true major weekend of college football. It's sad, but it's true.
And of course, as we record this tomorrow, a fairly important game for United States men's national team. Like, I think the biggest game since 2010.
So, yes, and if they win, their knockout game will be Saturday at 10 a.m., right? Is that not awesome or what? That's kind of that's got to be one of the best starting game times I can ever remember.
Absolutely. So thanks again, everyone. Hope you enjoyed Thanksgiving weekend, and I hope you were recovered. Me and Mike are not.
It's going to take me a while to recover.
And there is one thing to say.
Good job.
Thank you for listening to the TCFA podcast. For more college football news and wit, visit IntelligentFootball.com.